Well, to Changing Australia now, and a champion for children at risk of hearing loss in regional Australia, Donna Rees trained to become a teacher of the deaf in Dubbo in New South Wales soon after her daughter was diagnosed with profound hearing loss as a toddler. A serious middle ear infection in her newborn son introduced her to another side of hearing loss and inspired her to help close major gaps in hearing loss prevention across the region. Donna is the founder of the Dubbo and District Deaf Club and a co-creator and volunteer director of the Hear Our Heart Ear Bus project and is my guest this morning on Changing Australia. Donna, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Before having your own kids and dealing with some of this yourself, did you understand much about hearing loss, especially for really young kids?
Absolutely. I had no idea, to be honest. I remember when with a colleague back in probably early 93, 94, one of them saying, she'll be okay. She's probably just got glue ear. And that threw me. I didn't know what glue ear was. But, yeah, my path since then has certainly changed. And I know quite a lot about glue ear and hearing loss these days.
Mm. In the mid-90s, Donna, you were thrust into a very different world. Your daughter was diagnosed with permanent hearing loss for reasons you weren't able to confirm. And then your newborn son developed an ear infection known as otitis media. What happened?
Yeah, so I guess having two children with two absolute differences in hearing loss puts you on a different journey. The otitis media is a ear health issue, very common in young children, particularly under the age of 8. Jake, at the age of 2 weeks, had his first perforation and within 12 months had about 12, 13 of those with, you know, raging temperatures and burst eardrums, which is what a perf is. But what was coming out of the ear was what we call chronic suppurative otitis media. So it's very hard to, I guess, treat. And as a young mum back then, I was doing a lot of the what they call ear toileting with the treatment and so forth, and had good guidance from great paediatrician. But at the same time, Hayley, as a 3.5-year-old, was going through all her early intervention as a young deaf child as well. So yeah, it was pretty busy that year, and then on. Yeah,
yeah. How challenging was it for you and your family, not only dealing with what was in front of you at that time, but also wondering what the future might be like for your kids if there was significant hearing loss there?
Yeah, I guess hindsight is great because we talk about having four legs on the table, and early diagnosis is certainly one of those legs that we need. But out here in rural regional New South Wales even, it's sometimes hard for the families to get to that point of even a hearing screen, let alone the diagnosis. So it took us quite a while, both children actually. Hayley took at least 8 to 9 months before her diagnosis was confirmed. I flew down to Melbourne with her and ended up having a sedated hearing test. And then with Jake, it was obvious because of the perforations and things, which is sometimes not the case. If you've got, for example, glue ear, you can't see it. It certainly put us on a different journey. And for a lot of families, it's a hard journey to navigate. So hence why we created the Hear Our Heart eBus to help parents and families navigate and set them on pathways of support. And those pathways can include multiple avenues. For example, the GP, of course, once you've detected something and refer, and then ENTs, Hearing Australia, Teacher of the Deaf Support through the Department of Ed. There's multiple pathways the children can be set on. And, of course, all along with that is the conversations with the family to help them develop a deeper understanding of all the, I guess, underlying issues. And as you say, future, you know, what is the future? And we're always looking at the potential of these kids, and it shouldn't be because they've had hearing loss or ear health issues that have given them a rough start, I guess, in learning speech, language and developing good listening skills. The early intervention is very important in both health and definitely education. We're very strong advocates for the education in every aspect of what we do with the program.
Donna, tell me about this bus. What is it? How does it work?
So Hear Our Heart eBus was developed after seeing similar programs in Western Australia. Unlike their program, though, which is very health orientated, ours is, as I said, has a strong education focus, because those of us that volunteer to run it, myself and Rachel and our great committee, we are education teachers of the deaf in as our start point. So we understand that you need to help the parents understand what the hearing health literacy is, for example. So it's we've got 40 bus stops or places that we stop on the bus route. It goes out as far as 2 hours beyond Dubbo. We have seen thousands and thousands of children in close to 15 years now that we've been in development. Very successful. It's unique to our area, unique to Australia, I guess, in that we do have this strong education focus in the referral pathways. We try not to let any kids fall off the bridge or through the gaps. We've got some great visuals that demonstrate what it should look like, but very often we have, I guess, kind of like the wrecking ball come in and throw up a wall to our success in helping the kids get through some of those. At the moment, one of those is perhaps with the surgery pathways and so forth. So there's occasionally we come across those kinds of obstacles. But being active in schools has been amazing, because we can help the teachers themselves become more aware of it, and they can put in strategies and adjustments for the children that have got the ear health issues or hearing loss as well.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about some of that. If some of these issues haven't been diagnosed early, do they sometimes present later as behavioural issues?
Definitely. There's a close correlation between hearing loss and some behaviour diagnosis. Definitely gaps in their access and their pathways of learning in education. If they haven't got a good base of the foundations in speech, language and I guess the early concepts for literacy, math and so forth, they're pretty much they're playing catch up as they go through, and if they're not still hearing that well, it's a huge challenge for them. And we encourage schools to I guess help with that by putting in sound field amplification systems, and we've had some fantastic support from Australian organisations for that. I don't think there's a school in Dubbo that doesn't have sound field within their early years classroom settings, which is amazing. So, yeah, it's all about access. And, again, parents are the first teachers. So even the prior to school, the very young infants that have developed or have the ear health issues, we're trying to help close that gap right from the get-go with them to get them onto the right pathways with health and education.
If there are some hearing issues for kids very early in the piece, can they catch up with their language learning?
Yeah, I believe they can. Certainly the steps of the intervention and who you see, there's some fantastic speech and language pathologists, the teachers of the deaf themselves, if they happen to get onto the caseloads within their area, that's great. But there are a lot of kids that might not quite meet the criteria that is set up for that support, so it's really important that the classroom teachers themselves, the parents themselves, have a good understanding so that you can put things in place to help the kids have the good access. And even ourselves as parents model, good language and, take them off the devices and talk to them, have conversations and introduce them to the everyday world, in the supermarket. I can remember early days with Hayley with her. She had an assistive listening device hanging around her neck, and she'd be in the veggie department and I'd be deliberately, 15 metres away, giving her a little list of things to get to build her listening skills and auditory memory and her labels of all her fruit and veg and all that sort of thing. It doesn't have to be a strict sit behind the desk lesson, getting out into the everyday world and having those conversations. And I guess with respect to our Indigenous culture in Australia, the storytelling has always been there, and there's some amazing, stories in Dreamtime and that sort of thing also that come through in a lot of the areas that we're working with. And we have tried to build a lot of respect with our local communities, and yeah, a lot of that is having those conversations with the adults themselves in particular.
Dubbo is such an important hub for outlying towns and communities, but Dubbo itself is a long way from some of the specialists that may be needed for these kids. How much of a challenge can that be for families if they're able to get an appointment in the first place to get to these specialists who may be a long way away?
So in Dubbo ourselves, we have some great local services, but you're right in saying that then for more of the specialised services, for example, if a child did need to go down the cochlear implant pathway and that sort of thing, that's all in Sydney or Newcastle and so forth. The Dubbo District Deaf Club, right back from the onset, one of our objectives was to help families to get there, and even if you had access to the IPTAS, the Isolated Patients Scheme, we stepped in and helped the parents with finance to get to those appointments and tried to line up flights and things like that. And then these days we've got some amazing other NGOs and charities who also assist with flights and that sort of thing. So whilst it's hard to be distant and remote, thankful for technology with, you know, video streaming and flights and...
is it hard for some of these kids to fly if their ears are uncomfortable for them?
I guess the ones that are flying are more so the ones that have the sensory neural issues, whereas the children with the otitis media ear health issues wouldn't necessarily be going for those operations in Sydney. We can do them here in Dubbo. Yeah.
How tough is it to get funding for this assistance and for the bus and the other work that you're doing?
Big question. We are on the brink of, I'd hate to say it, but if we don't get funding beyond the next 6 months, we're pretty much in struggle street. It has been hard. We've been very fortunate with some philanthropic for the last 8 years, but that's rounding up very soon. We do a lot of grant writing, school holidays now, so that's been one of the chores these holidays. Fundraising, we've got fantastic, I guess, in-kind support with some local industries and partnerships who help us with the bus itself, and the bus was donated back in 2017. So it's coming on 10 years, so I guess maintenance and care of that and the ongoing costs. It's an expensive program to run, but being unique and successful, and we believe that we're making a difference, and I guess parents themselves are very thankful for us with our support. It would be very sad to see it fold, that's for sure. And in hindsight, you know, in 12 months' time, if someone said, oh, that bus was great, you know, whatever happened to it, I don't want to be having that conversation in 12 months' time. We want to be saying, you know, it's still going strong. We've had a new wave of amazing support, and that's what we're really rallying for at the moment, yeah.
Donna, thank you so much for making some time to speak with Radio National Breakfast this morning.
Thank you.